The next speaker, Kwame Eme Samburu.
I've had the privilege of speaking at many gatherings around the United States over the last 20-odd years about Malcolm and about politics, and this seems to be the most significant gathering that I've ever had the opportunity to be part of. And I'm told that the early sessions, what happened last night, was very inspiring. I was born in Harlem in 1934. And I experienced a lot of the scenes that Malcolm experienced, a lot of the experiences that he had during the 1940s, Small's Paradise, the streets of Harlem, the living conditions of black Americans. I lived in New York City for 39 years in Harlem and the Bronx. I now live in California. I first started hearing about the Nation of Islam back in 1958. In the mid-50s, that's when a growing consciousness began to develop among not only African Americans, but many people about what was happening around the world and in this country, racist cases getting publicized a lot. There was Emmett Till, who was brutally beaten to death in 1955 in Mississippi, and his murderers were never put to death or in jail for it. There was the rising civil rights struggle, the Montgomery bus boycott, the rising independence of African nations, and discussions that I would hear people have or comments for and against or indifferent to the Nation of Islam, these black Muslims. And Mike Wallace put on a show called The Hate That Hate Produced. I first saw the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I heard him speak at the old St. Nicholas Arena, which used to be, I think, at 68th Street and Broadway in that area. And I first started hearing Malcolm around 1958. At Temple No. 7, which was just a few blocks away from where I spent most of my youth as a youngster. I was raised on 116th Street between Manhattan and Morningside. And I was also there when he was assassinated. Malcolm spoke at a gathering at a school that my first son went to, which was run by members of the Nation of Islam in 1960, and I had a chance to hear him close up. And I heard him speak on many occasions as a Muslim and as a member of the Nation of Islam, rather, and when he left the Nation of Islam, or many meetings. Malcolm's warmth always impressed me. His dedication, his integrity, his curiosity to want to find out, to think for himself, to read, to study, to learn, to encourage others. He never tried to elevate himself above others. And as some people did say, what we need to do is follow Malcolm's example and not look to dot the I's and cross the T's as if Malcolm was infallible, because no human being is or was infallible. But Malcolm was one of the greatest that ever lived. Malcolm is in that tradition of revolutionary freedom fighters, from Denmark Vesey to Nat Turner and Patrice Lumumba and Ernesto Che Guevara and Steve Biko and so many others, and Walter Rodney, who we should know about too. Some of the lessons that I learned from Malcolm and some of the ways that we started to converge during the 60s and our general ideas was Malcolm's growing anti-capitalism, because he realized that this system of capitalism is based on robbery and exploitation. And even though I can't recall hearing him quote this book, I'm pretty sure that he was familiar with Capitalism and Slavery by Eric Williams. Malcolm's sympathy to socialist ideas, to want to find out what socialism was all about. And his honesty to admit when he didn't know something, he wouldn't say that he did. When he was asked a question about Karl Marx, he said, "I don't know much about Karl Marx." But Malcolm was against exploitation, he was against oppression, and he was dedicated to trying to learn from examples of people around the world how they either lost their fight for freedom or how they gained their struggle, and see what type of lessons he could learn from that. And this is the type of a person that we should really strive to emulate. I was present at Malcolm's assassination, not because I came there that day to hear what Malcolm had to say, That weekend I was taking care of my son, and I came there to that meeting because I had a discussion with some people who was involved with me in a group called the Freedom Now Party, an attempt to build a black political party. And we were trying to decide when could we meet and have a discussion about whether we should try to keep this attempt to build a black political party alive or let it die for right now and carry it on at some other time in the future. Because on February 16th of 1965, I used to drive a taxi cab here in New York, and I came home from work that morning. I was driving at night around noon, and Wynn's radio said that three men and a Canadian woman had been arrested on a charge of plotting to blow up the Liberty Bell, the Washington Monument, and the Statue of Liberty. And I said, what's going on? They gave the names of the three, among them Bob Collier. And then I said, well, I'll wait till later on and try to find out. I'll ask Ray Wood. He might know, because he was active in the Freedom Now Party. He was the co-treasurer and secretary. And then around 3:30 that afternoon, they said Ray Wood was undercover agent. I said, oh, my man Ray. Spied on me for 8 months. And so that's why I happened to be there that afternoon. So I was more of an ear witness rather than an eyewitness, because I had to go to work and take my son home. And so my attention was directed toward the people who I was there to meet with, and Malcolm came out to my right on the stage. And just prior to him coming out, in back of me, there were two African Americans in complexion that started an altercation to draw attention away from Malcolm. I heard one of them say, get your hands out of my pocket. I turned around, and then I turned back saying, why don't they just keep quiet and stop that stuff? I heard him say it again, and that's just when Benjamin 2X had introduced Malcolm as a man who will give his life for you. And then his guards had started walking away from him to put down that altercation, and that's when the shots rang out, and my attention was still directed not at the stage but toward the group, and I grabbed my son, and I hit the floor, and I heard the screaming. I heard Billy Shabazz say, oh my God, they're killing my husband. The United States government was responsible for the death of Malcolm X. I attended all of the meetings that was held in New York City by the OAAU, with only two, I believe, except for two, that Malcolm X spoke at. And at all of those meetings, as I recall, there were visible police presence there. And this assassination happened 1 week after his house was firebombed. And as I walked toward the Audubon, I didn't see any visible police around to intimidate people. And I thought, what was wrong? Something's going on. And that was about 3:15 as I walked in into there. And then at the trial, they didn't try to find out really who sent those people there. They wanted to quiet it. They wanted to start internecine conflict between black supporters of Malcolm and the Nation of Islam, fighting each other. That's what they tried to do. Now, some of the lessons and some of the ways that Malcolm's views and mine and many others that I know converged is not only Malcolm's growing anti-capitalism, his sympathy to socialist ideas, his being a consistent nationalist, which I consider myself to be, a black nationalist and a socialist, but Malcolm's internationalism and his condemnation of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, because it doesn't make a damn bit of difference which one gets in office. It doesn't matter. So the Freedom Now Party did fall apart. And then a number of years later, 1979 to be exact, another attempt was made, the National Black Independent Political Party. And my wife and I threw ourselves into that work. We felt that was a continuation of much of the basic essence of Malcolm and of the Organization of Afro-American Unity. But for quite a few different reasons, after about 4 years, that also dissipated. Politics is essential to our struggle. And if we read the writings of Malcolm, his speeches, we see where Malcolm continually talked about politics. This was the basic essence. He wanted to study it, understand it, learn. He wanted to meet with other people who were involved politically or who had the willingness to go and study, and then we meet together and we discuss how can we develop a political program to get us out of this. He remained religious. He remained a Muslim. But he said, your religion should be in the closet. we should come together, whether we're atheists, whether we're Baptists, regardless, come together to discuss our common problem and map out a program democratically, a program and build a leadership. One finger can make a point, and Malcolm made many points. But five fingers make a fist, and this is what Malcolm wanted to build. A fist, with each finger making a contribution. And this is what the United States government, which is the enemy of all people in the world fighting for freedom, did not want, and that's why they murdered Malcolm, and they wanted to try to intimidate and terrorize those who were trying to work with Malcolm and who admired him by killing him in front of an audience of about 400 people. But that didn't stop the struggle. And so I'm trying to touch on just a few things so that we can have a fruitful discussion period and go further. I was also active in the Committee of Black Americans for Truth about the Middle East in 1970. I felt that was also a continuation of those general convergence of views that Malcolm and others like myself were getting. Because in the summer of 1970, June to be exact, I believe it was, a full-page ad appeared in the New York Times, signed by an assorted group of Negroes ranging from Bayard Rustin, a professional pacifist, but yet who signed this ad supporting black, saying black Americans should support the state of Israel because it's only democracy in the Middle East, and also that black Americans should support the United States government, giving Israel all the weapons that it needs to defend itself, but yet he's going to tell us to turn the other cheek. A professional pacifist. And A. Philip Randolph, who did have some progressive moments in his earlier life, but in his later life he was confused and had turned around. So we organized a group called Committee of Black Americans for Truth about the Middle East. We said we are not anti-Jewish, but we're anti-Zionist. And we put a half a page ad in the New York Times, November 1st, 1970, expressing our opposition to Zionism and imperialism and how Israel is aligned with South Africa and an independent exploiter in its own right, but also an ally and a puppet of American imperialism to try to maintain the general status quo in the Middle East to keep the Arab masses divided and oppressed. And then after that, we also had the Committee for Caribbean Freedom, because there was a developing movement in the Caribbean at that time, and in Trinidad there was even a black power movement against the government of Eric Williams. So this means that black power doesn't only have to be relevant in a white-dominated society, but if it's blacks running the society in the interests of white domestic or foreign interests, black power is relevant too. And black power is impossible without the destruction of white power. They cannot coexist. Because white power is based on exploitation and the dominance over black people and others, and even the masses of poor whites. So therefore, how can black people get power over themselves and this other power, which is a parasitic power, which is based on black people being powerless, poor, exploited, how can the two coexist? They cannot coexist. Black nationalism is essential for black people to develop a healthy understanding of ourselves, and to be a consistent nationalist, you would also have to be an internationalist. And then you would have to do like what Malcolm did. He began to add something else to his nationalism to qualify it. What type of a nationalist? Because Mobutu and Zaire, he calls himself a nationalist too. He was behind one of the major people behind the assassination of Patrice Lumumba. Then when he took over, he changed the name of Leopoldville, the capital of the Congo, to Kinshasa, then changed the name to Zaire. He's a nationalist. Yeah, he has his hat on and everything. He has his stick and everything. But that type of nationalism we don't want. Malcolm's nationalism was also anti-capitalist. It was international and it was anti-imperialist and sympathetic to socialist ideas because he felt that that was where the direction was. In that area, there are some people who are trying to say that Malcolm was giving up his nationalism. No, he didn't give up his nationalism. He just started adding something to it. And he started realizing that it takes allies. We can have our own struggle, or rather our own movement, black control. They have allies that are Hindu, that are Muslim, that are Buddhist, that are Japanese, that are Chinese, that are Irish, that are of every single ethnic group almost on the planet, and religion and color, to maintain the status quo. And so therefore, we must also be conscious and be politically sophisticated to do that too. We need black unity, and we need a class-conscious black nationalism, because I feel that some of the major reasons why the attempts to build a black political formation in this country failed is because it did not have enough working-class blacks in it. It was overly weighted with the academic petty bourgeois type of blacks, and that led to its downfall. The type that always is going to try to rationalize supporting Democrats. And the Democratic Party is a sucker trap. I would not vote for my mother if she is running for president on the Democratic Party ticket against Jesse Helms on the Republican Party ticket. Because it doesn't matter. Both parties represent the system, the establishment. One party will try to throw you a few crumbs to hold on to the loaf. The other party wants to put more guns around the loaf, but they both have the same objective. The Democratic and Republican parties have a bipartisan foreign policy on the Middle East right now. And what we need to do right now, Malcolm is here, we need to organize opposition to American involvement in the Middle East, the right of self-determination for the Arab people. We need to organize for a revolution. And revolution means that you want change by any means necessary, as Malcolm said. We must not advocate violence, but that doesn't mean that we're non-violent. No. Violence is a tactic. If you advocate violence, the establishment has a lot of agent provocateurs to put on your tail to try to frame you up in some type of violent act or encourage you in it. And even if you don't do anything, they'll put the bombs and whatnot on you, and then the press will come out and they'll arrest you and say, yeah, they were carrying out some act of violence. So we have to be quite sophisticated. I was in Georgia in 1968, I recall. I ran for vice president of the United States as a socialist revolutionary. And after I spoke at a meeting, they had the TV cameras on me, microphone in my face, and they said, the guy said, Mr. Boutelle, do you advocate the violent overthrow of the United States government? Boy, they really think you're simple. I said, no, I do not advocate violence. I said, the United States government advocates violence. Not only are they advocating it, they're carrying it out around the world against the Panthers in Vietnam. They're supporting the government of South Africa. They're supplying Portugal with napalm and other weapons to kill people in Angola, Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau. And look what they did to the Native Americans. And here it is, George Bush, supposed to be head of a Christian country, and they say that Jesus was the Prince of Peace, and what is he talking about, the Middle East? Use force and violence. And then they got this black Uncle Tom puppet, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's no hero to us. No. So violence is a tactic. This ruling class will not give up peaceably. No ruling class has ever left the scene peaceably. But we have to know what time it is and how to struggle. And the main thing, we have to mobilize our minds and arm our minds and develop proper type of organizations to know how to struggle and develop conscious thinking organizations. I don't follow anybody. I was not a follower of Malcolm X. Because if I followed Malcolm X, an individual, when he got shot down, then I'd be looking for somebody else to follow, maybe. I don't follow nobody. I don't want anyone to follow me. Malcolm didn't want people to follow him. Malcolm believed in we, not me. Our collective energies, intelligence, thoughts, experiences is what we need. Because the struggle is bigger than any individual. The struggle must go on beyond individuals. And so we have to take Malcolm's intelligence, Malcolm's contributions, Malcolm's honesty, Malcolm's courage, along with the courage, intelligence, and honesty, integrity of many people, and build a movement. And the goal must be the revolutionary destruction of the capitalist system worldwide, and the basic enemy is here with the tentacles around the world. This is it. We must build political opposition. We must organize, and we must be involved in struggles on a local, national, international basis. That is what we must do. We must run candidates for office representing the community, representing the people, representing the black working class, and seek unity wherever possible with other forces that could be moving in the same direction on certain issues. This is what is needed. We've had two revolutions in this country so far. We must get active in trying to build and organize and mobilize for the third revolution. I've advocated revolution for 30 years. I was 56 years old October 13th, and I'm not tired. Don't you get tired. And before I close, We must also try to take care of ourselves physically so that we can be around for that long haul. Do you know what is killing more black people than the Klan, than crack, than the skinheads? And Malcolm would be against it too, as you know, cigarette smoking. That is the worst drug in the community. They want to put Marion Barry in jail for using an illegal drug. And all over the black communities, you have these people selling these legal drugs, cigarettes and alcohol, that kills over 500,000 Americans every year. And in 3 years' time, more Americans die from that than all the wars this country has fought.